Osho, Vigyan Bhairav Tantra, Volume 1, The Book of the Secrets, a New Commentary. Discourse number 17, given in Bombay, India.
Life has two dimensions. The one of being and the other of doing. Your being is your nature. It is with you always. You have not to do anything to get it. It is already the case. You are it. It is not that you possess it. Not even that distance exists between you and it. You are it. You are your being. Doing is achievement. Whatsoever you do is not already the case. If you do it, it will happen. If you will not do it, it will not happen. All that is not already the case is not your being. To exist, to survive, you have to do much. And then by and by, your activity becomes a barrier to know your being. Your activity is your circumference. You live on it. You cannot live without it. But it is only the circumference. It is not you. It is not the center. Whatsoever you have is the achievement of your doing. Having is the result of doing. But the center is surrounded, engulfed by your doing and your having. The first thing to note before we proceed into these techniques is that whatsoever you have is not your being, and whatsoever you do or you can do is not your being. Your being precedes all doing. Your being precedes all your possessions, all your having. But the mind is constantly involved into doing and into having. Beyond mind or below mind exists your being. How to paint it into that center? That's what religions have been searching. That's what has always been the search of all those who are interested to know the basic reality of human existence, the ultimate core, the substance of your being. Unless you understand this division between the circumference and the center, these sutras which we are going to discuss, you will not be able to understand them. So note the distinction. Whatsoever you have, money, knowledge, prestige, whatsoever you have, it is not you. You have them. That's your possession. You are different from it. Secondly, whatsoever you do, is not your being. You may do it or you may not do it. For example, you laugh. You may laugh, you may not laugh. You run. You may run, you may not run. But you are, and there is no choice. You cannot choose your being. You are already there. Action is a choice. You may choose, you may not choose. You may do this, you may not do this. You may become a saint, or you may become a thief. But your sainthood and your thiefhood, both are doings. You can choose, you can change. A saint can become a thief and a thief can become a saint. But that's not your being. Your being precedes your sainthood, your thiefhood. Whenever you have to do something, you ought to be there already. Otherwise you cannot do it. Who runs? Who laughs? Who steals? Who becomes a saint? The being must precede all activity. So activity can be chosen. Being cannot be chosen. Being is the chooser, not the chosen. And you cannot choose the chooser. It is already there. You cannot do anything about it. Remember this, having, doing, are with you, just as a circumference is with a center. But you are the center. This center is the self. You may call it the Atma, or whatsoever name you like. This center is your innermost point. How to reach it? Because unless one reaches it, knows it, unless one realizes it, one cannot reach to a blissful state which is eternal. One cannot know the deathless. One cannot know the divine. Unless one realizes this center, one will remain in misery, anguish and suffering. The circumference is the hell. These techniques are the means how to enter into this center. The first technique, just as you have the impulse to do something, stop. All these techniques are concerned with stopping in the middle. George Gurdjieff made these techniques very well known into the West. But he was not aware of Vigyan Bhairav Tantra. He learned these techniques from Tibet, from Buddhist Lamas. And he worked on these techniques in the West. And many, many seekers came to realize their center through these techniques. He called them stop exercises. But the source of these exercises is Vigyan Bhairav Tantra. Buddhists learned from Vigyan Bhairav. Then Sufis have also such exercises. They are also borrowed from Vigyan Bhairav. This is the source book, basically, of all techniques which are known all over the world. Gurdjieff used it in a very simple way. For example, he will tell his students to dance. A group is dancing, a group of 20 people is dancing. Then suddenly he will say, stop. And the moment Guruji will say, stop, they have to stop totally. Whatsoever may be the pose, they have to stop then and there. No change is to be made. No adjustment is to be made. If your one foot was above the earth and you were just standing on one, you have to remain that way. If you fall, that's another thing. But you are not to cooperate with the fall. Your eyes were open, they have to remain open. No, you cannot close them. If they close by themselves, that's another thing. But as far as you are concerned, consciously, you have stopped. You have become just like a stone statue. Miracles happened because in activity, in dance, in movement, when suddenly you stop, a gap happens. This sudden stoppage of all activity suddenly divides you into two, your body and you. Your body was in movement. Suddenly you stop. The body has the tendency to move. It was in movement. There is momentum. You were dancing, there is momentum. This sudden stop, the body is not ready for it. Suddenly you feel the body has the impulse to do something. But you have stopped. A gap comes into existence. You feel your body as something distant, far away, with impulse to move, with momentum for activity. And because you have stopped and you are not cooperating with the body and its activity and its impulse, its momentum, you become separate from it. But you can deceive yourself. A slight cooperation and the gap will not happen. For example, if you feel uncomfortable, the teacher says, stop, you have heard the word, still you make yourself comfortable and then stop, then nothing will happen. Then you have deceived yourself, not the teacher, because you missed the point. The whole point of the technique is missed. Suddenly when you hear the word stop, instantly you have stopped, not doing anything now. The posture was inconvenient. You were afraid you may fall down, you may break a bone. Whatsoever happens, no, it is not your concern. If you have any concern, you will deceive. This suddenly becoming dead creates a gap. The stopping is at the body and the stopper is the center. The circumference and the center are separate. In that sudden stopping, you can feel yourself for the first time. You can feel the center. Guruji used this technique to help many. This technique has many dimensions. It can be used in many ways. But first, try to understand the mechanism. The mechanism is simple. You are in activity. When you are in activity, you forget yourself completely. activity becomes the center of your attention. Someone has died and you are weeping and crying and tears are falling down. You have forgotten yourself completely. Someone who has died has become the center. And around that center, this activity is happening. Your weeping, your crying, your sadness, your tears. If I say to you suddenly, stop, and you stop yourself completely, you will be totally taken away from your body and the realm of activity. Whenever you are in activity, you are in it, deeply absorbed in it. Sudden stoppage throws you off balance. It throws you out of activity. This thrownness leads you to the center. Ordinarily, what we are doing, from one activity we move to another. We go on from one activity to another, from A to B and from B to C. In the morning, the moment you are awake, activity has started. Now you will be active the whole day. You will change many activities. But you will not be inactive for a single moment. How to be inactive? It is difficult. And if you try to be inactive, your effort to be inactive will become an activity. There are many who are trying to be inactive. They sit in a Buddha posture. They try to be inactive. But how can you try to be inactive? The very effort is an activity again. So you can convert inactivity also in activity. You can force yourself to be quiet, still. But that forcing is an activity of the mind. That's why so many try to go in meditation. But they never reach anywhere. Because their meditation is again an activity. So, they can change. You were singing an ordinary song. You can change to bhajan. You can sing now a devotional song. But both are activities. You are running, you are walking, you are reading. These are activities. You can pray. That too is an activity. From one activity to another, one can move. And the last in the night, when you are falling into a sleep, you are still active. The activity has not stopped. That's why dreams happen. Because this activity goes on. You have fallen asleep, but the activity continues. Just in the subconscious, you are still active, doing things, possessing things, losing things, moving. Dreaming means you have fallen asleep because of exertion, but the activity is still there, continuous. Only sometimes for few moments, and they have become more and more rare for the modern man. Only for few moments dreaming stops, and you are totally asleep. But then, that inactivity is unconscious. You are not conscious. You are fast asleep. The activity has ceased. Now there is no circumference. No, you are at the center, but totally exhausted, totally dead, unconscious. That's why Hindus have always been saying that susupti, that is dreamless sleep, and samadhi, the ultimate ecstasy, are both similar, same, with only one difference, but the difference is great. The difference is of awareness. In susupti, in dreamless sleep, you are at the center of your being, but unaware. In samadhi also, in ultimate ecstasy, in ultimate meditation also, you are at the center, but aware. But that's the difference. But a great difference. Because unaware, even if you are at the center, it is meaningless. It refreshes you. It makes you more alive again. It gives you vitality. And in the morning you feel fresh and blissful. But unaware, even at the center, your life remains the same. In samadhi, you enter yourself fully conscious, fully alert. And once you are at the center fully alert, you will never be the same again. Now you will know who you are. Now you will know your possessions, your actions are just on the periphery, just the ripples, not your nature. The mechanism of these techniques of stopping is to throw you suddenly into inactivity. Suddenly is the point. Because if you try to be inactive, you will turn it into activity. So don't try. Suddenly be inactive. That is the meaning of a stop. You are running and I say stop. Don't try. Just stop. If you try, you will miss the point. For example, here, you are sitting. If I say stop, then stop immediately. Then in there, not a single moment is to be missed. If you try and adjust and settle down, and then say, okay, now I will stop, you have missed the point. Suddenness is the base. So don't make any effort to stop. Just stop. You can try it anywhere. You are taking your bath, suddenly order yourself, stop, and stop. For a single moment even, you will feel a different phenomena happening within you. You have been thrown to the center. Suddenly everything stops, not only the body. When the body stops totally, your mind stops also. When you say stop, don't breathe then. Let everything stop. No breathing, no body movement. For a single moment, remain in this stop. And you will feel you have penetrated suddenly in a rocket speed to the center. And even a glimpse is miraculous, revolutionary. It changes you. And by, you can have more clear glimpses of the center. That's why inactivity is not to be practiced. You use it suddenly, unawares. So a teacher can be helpful. This is a group method. Guruji used it as a group method. Because if you say stop, you can deceive easily. First you make yourself comfortable and then say stop. Or even if consciously you have not made any preparation for it, unconsciously you may be prepared. You may say, no, I can stop. If it is done by the mind, if there is a planning behind it, it is useless. Then the technique will not be of any help. So in a group it is good. A teacher is working with you and he says, stop. And he will find out moments when you are in a very inconvenient posture. And then a flash happens, a sudden lightning. Activity can be practiced. Inactivity cannot be practiced. And if you practice it, it becomes just another activity. You can be inactive only suddenly. Sometimes it happens. You are driving a car and suddenly you feel there is going to be an accident. Another car has reached. Just a moment and there will be a clash. Suddenly your mind stops. Breathing stops. Everything stops. So many times in such accidents, one is thrown to the center. But you may miss the point even in an accident. I was in a car and there was an accident. And one of the most beautiful accidents possible. 3 persons were with me, but they missed the whole thing completely. They missed the whole thing completely. It could have been a revolution in their lives, but they missed. The car went down in a river bed, dry bed, from a bridge. The car was totally upside down. Three persons with me, they began crying, they began weeping, and one woman was there, and she was telling, she was just beside me, and she was telling, I'm dead, I'm dead. I told her, if you are dead, then no one will be here to say this. But she was trembling, and she said, I'm dead. What will happen to my children? Even after we carried her out of the car, she was trembling and saying the same thing. What will happen to my children? I am dead. It took at least half an hour for her to calm down. She missed the point. It was such a beautiful thing. Suddenly, you could have it stopped everything. And you couldn't do anything. The car was falling from the bridge, so your activity was not needed at all. You couldn't do anything. But still, the mind can create activity. She started thinking about her children. And then she began crying that I am dead. A second moment missed. In dangerous situations, the mind stops automatically. Why? Because mind is a mechanism. It can work on the routine things. that which has been trained to do. You can't train your mind for accidents. Otherwise they will not be called accidents if you are ready. If you have passed through rehearsals, then they are not accidents. Accident means that the mind was not ready to do anything. The thing was so sudden and leaped from the unknown that mind cannot do anything. It is not ready. It was not trained for it. It is bound to stop. Unless you start something else. Unless you start something for which you are trained. This woman who was crying about her children was not at all attentive to what was happening. She was not even aware that she is alive. The present moment was not in her focus of consciousness. She has moved away from the situation to her children, to death, and to other things. She has escaped. As far as her attention is concerned, she has escaped from the situation completely. But as far as the situation was concerned, nothing could be done. One could only be aware. Whatsoever was happening, was happening. One could only be aware. As far as the present moment is concerned, in an accident, what can you do? It is already beyond you, and the mind is not prepared for it. So mind cannot function. Mind stops. That's why dangers have a secret appeal, intrinsic appeal. They are meditative moments. If you race a car, it goes beyond 90 and then beyond 100 and then 110 and 120. Now there is a situation in which anything can happen and you will not be able to do. Now really the car is beyond control, going beyond control. Suddenly the mind cannot function. It is not ready for it. That is the thrill of his speed. Because a silence creeps in. You are thrown to the center. These techniques help you to move to the center without any accidents, without any danger. But remember, you cannot practice them. When I say you cannot practice them, what do I mean? In a way you can practice them, suddenly you can stop. But that stopping must be sudden. You must not be prepared for it. You should not think about it and plan about it and say at 12 I will stop. Let the unknown happen to you unprepared. Move in the unknown uncharted without any knowledge. These are the techniques. Just as you have the impulse to do something, stop. This is one dimension. For example, you have the impulse to sneeze. You are feeling the impulse is coming. You are feeling the sneeze is coming. Now a moment comes, you cannot do anything. It will happen. But in the very beginning of the feeling, when you feel the sensation of sneeze coming to you, the moment you become aware, it stops. What can you do? Can you stop the sneeze? If you try to stop the sneeze will come sooner. Because stopping will make your mind more conscious about it. And you will feel more the sensation. You will become more sensitive. Your total attention will be there. And that attention will help the sneeze to come out sooner. It will become unbearable. You cannot stop the sneeze directly, but you can stop yourself. What can you do? You feel the sensation that the sneeze is coming, stop. Don't try to stop the sneeze, just you yourself stop. Don't do anything. Remain completely unmoved. Not even your breath going in and coming out. For a moment stop. And you will feel the impulse has gone back, dropped. And in this dropping of the impulse, a subtle energy is released, which is used in going towards the center. Because in sneeze you are throwing some energy out. In any impulse. Impulse means you are burdened with some energy which you cannot use and cannot absorb. It wants to move out, wants to be thrown out. You want a relief. That's why after the sneeze you will feel good. A subtle well-being. Nothing has happened. You have simply released some energy which was superfluous, a burden. Now it is no more there, you are relieved of it. You feel a subtle relaxation inside. That's why physiologists, particularly Pavlov, B. Skinner and others, they say sex is also just like sneezing. They say physiologically there is no difference. Sex is just like sneezing. You are overburdened with energy. You want to throw it out. Once it is thrown, your mechanism relaxes, unburdened. You feel good. That goodness is just a relief, according to physiologists. And as far as physiology goes, they are right. They are right. Whenever you have some impulse, just as you have the impulse to do something, stop. Not only inner physiological impulses, any impulse you can use. For example, you were going to drink a glass of water. You had touched the water, the glass. Suddenly, stop. Let the hand be there. Let the desire to drink, the thirst be there inside, you stop completely. The glass outside, the thirst inside, the hand on the glass, the eyes on the glass, stop suddenly, no breathing, no movement, as if you have become dead. The very impulse, the thirst, will release energy. And that energy is used for going to the center. You will be thrown to the center. Why? Because impulse is a movement outward. Remember, impulse means energy moving outward. Remember another thing, energy is always in movement. Either going out or coming in. Energy can never be static. These are the laws. If you understand the laws, then the mechanism of the technique will be easy. Energy is always movement. Either it is moving out or moving in. Energy can never be static. If it is static, it is not energy. And there is nothing which is not energy. everything is moving somewhere. When impulse, any impulse comes to you, it means energy is moving out. That's why your hand goes to the glass. You have moved out, a desire has come to do something. All activity are movements towards that which is without, from within. Movement from within to without. When you stop suddenly, the energy cannot be static with you. You have become static, but the energy cannot be static with you, and the mechanism through which it was moving out is now dead. It has stopped. So what the energy can do? Energy cannot do anything else than move inwards. Energy cannot be static. It was going out, you have stopped. The mechanism has stopped. But the mechanism which can lead it towards the center is there. This energy will move inwards. And you are converting your energy and changing its dimension every moment without knowing. You are angry and you feel to beat someone or to destroy something or to do something violent. Try this. Take someone, your friend, your wife, your children, anyone. Hug, kiss, embrace. You were angry, you were going to destroy something, you wanted to do some violent thing. Your mind was destructive, the energy was moving towards violence. Love someone immediately. In the beginning you may feel that this is just like acting. How can I love? I am angry. How can I love in this moment? I am angry. You don't know the mechanism. In this moment you can love deeply because the energy has arisen. It has come to a point where it wants to be expressed. And energy needs movement. If you just start loving someone, the same energy will move into love. And you will feel a rush of energy you may not have ever felt. There are persons who cannot go into love unless they are angry, unless they are violent. There are people who can go only in deep love when their energy is moving violently. You may not have observed, but it happens daily. Couples will fight before they make love. Wives and husbands, they fight. They become angry. They become violent. And then they make love. And they may not have understood what is happening. Then it will become a mechanical habit. So whenever they will fight, they will love. And the day they will not fight, they will not be able to love. Particularly in Indian villages where wives are still beaten, if a certain husband stops beating the wife, it is known that now he has stopped loving her. And even wives understand it, that if their husband has become totally non-violent towards them, it means the love has stopped. He is not fighting. It means he is not loving. Why? Why fight is so associated with love? It is associated because the same energy can move. The same energy moves in different dimensions. You may call it love or hate. They look so opposite. They are not so opposite because the same energy moves. So a person who becomes incapable of hate becomes incapable of love in your meanings of love. A person who cannot be violently angry becomes incapable of the love which you know. He may be capable of a different quality of love, but that is not your love. A Buddha, he loves, but that love is totally different. That's why Buddha calls it compassion. He never calls it love. It is more like compassion. Less like your love, because your love implies hate, anger, violence. Energy can move, can change directions. It can become hate, it can become love. The same energy. And the same energy can move in words also. So whenever you have the impulse to do something, stop. This is not suppression. You are not suppressing anything. You are just playing with energy. Just playing with energy and knowing the working of it, how it moves inwardly. But remember, the impulse must be real and authentic. Otherwise nothing will happen. For example, there is no thirst. You move to a glass and then suddenly stop. Nothing will happen because there is nothing to happen. The energy was not moving. You were feeling very loving towards your wife, your husband, your friend. You wanted to hug, to kiss. Stop. But the impulse must be there authentically. If the impulse is not there, and you were just going to console someone, to kiss, because the kiss is expected, and then you stop, then nothing will happen, because nothing was moving inside. So first remember, the impulse must be authentic, real. Only with a real impulse, energy moves. And when a real impulse is suddenly stopped, the energy becomes suspended. No dimension to move out. It turns in. It has to move. It cannot remain there. But we are so false that nothing seems real. You eat your meal because of the clock, because of the time, not because of hunger. So if you stop, nothing will happen. Because there was really no hunger behind it, no impulse, no energy was there moving. That's why, if you take your meal at 1 o'clock, at 1 o'clock you will feel the hunger, but the hunger is false. It is just a mechanical habit. Your body is not hungry. Just a dead habit. If you don't eat, you will feel something is missing. But if you can remain for 1 hour without eating, you will forget. The hunger will have subsided. A real hunger will grow more. Bound to grow. If the hunger was real, then at 2 you will feel more hungry. If the hunger was false, at 2 you will have completely forgotten. Really, there will be no hunger at 2. Even if you want to eat now, you will feel not hungry. The hunger was just a false, mechanical feeling. No energy was moving, just the mind saying to you that now this is the time to eat, so eat. If you are feeling sleepy, stop. But the feeling must be real, that's the problem. And that's the problem for us. It was not so in Siva's time. When the Vigyan Bhairav Tantra was for the first time preached, it was not so. Man was authentic. Humanity was real, pure. And nothing was false about it. With us, everything is false. You pretend that you love. You pretend that you are angry. You go on pretending, and then you forget yourself that whether you are pretending or anything real is left. You never say what is in you. You never express it. You go on expressing that is not there. Watch yourself and you will come to know it. You say something, you feel something else. Really you wanted to say the quite contrary. But if you say the real thing, you will become a total unfit, because the whole society is false. And in a false society, you can exist only as a false person. The more adjusted, the more false. Because if you want to be real, you will feel maladjustment. That's why renunciation came into existence. It came because of a false society. Buddha had to leave, not because it had any positive meaning, but only negative meaning. Because with a false society, you cannot be real. Or at every moment, you are in a constant struggle. Unnecessary. And dissipating energy. So leave the unreal, leave the false, so that you can be real. That was the basic reason of all renunciation. But watch yourself, how unreal you are. Watch the double mind. You are saying something, you are feeling the quite contrary. Simultaneously you are saying something else in your mind, and saying something else without. So if you stop anything which is not real, the technique will not help. So find out something authentic about you and try to stop that. Everything has not become false. Many things are still real. Fortunately, sometimes everyone is real. In some moments, everyone is real. Then stop it. You are feeling angry. And you feel it is real. You are going to destroy something, beat your child or do something. Stop. But don't stop with a consideration. Don't say that anger will be bad, so I should stop. No. Don't say that this is not going to help the child, so I should stop. No mental consideration is needed. Because if you consider, then the energy has moved into consideration. This is an inner mechanism. If I say I should not beat my child because this is not going to do anything good for him, and this is not good for me also, and this is useless, and this never helps, the same energy which was going to be anger has become consideration. Now I have considered the whole thing, the energy has subsided. it has moved into consideration, into thinking. Then you stop. Then there is no energy to move in. When you feel angry, don't consider. Don't think good or bad. Don't think at all. Suddenly remember the technique and stop. Anger is pure energy. Nothing bad, nothing good. It may become good, it may become bad. That will depend on the result, not on the energy. It can become bad if it goes out and destructs something, becomes destructive. It may become a beautiful ecstasy if it moves within and throws you to the center. It may become a flowering. Energy is simply energy, pure, innocent, neutral. Don't consider it. You were going to do something, don't think, simply stop. And then remain stopped in that remaining. You will have a glimpse of the inner center. You will forget the periphery and the center will come to your vision. Just as you have the impulse to do something, stop. Try it. Remember three things. Try it only when a real impulse is there. Secondly, don't think about stopping. Just stop. And thirdly, wait. When you have stopped, no breathing, no movement, wait, what happens? Don't try, when I say wait, I mean don't try to think now about the inner center. Then you will again miss. Don't think of the self, of the Atma. Don't think that now the glimpse is there, now the glimpse is coming. Don't think, just wait. Let the impulse, the energy move itself. If you start thinking about Brahma and Atma and the center, the energy has moved into this thinking. You can raise this inner energy very simply. Just a thought will be enough to give it a direction. Then you will start thinking. When I say stop, it means totally stop. Full point. Nothing is moving. As if the whole time has stopped. There is no movement. Simply you are. In that simple existence, suddenly the center explodes. The second technique, when some desire comes, consider it, then suddenly quit it. This is a different dimension of the same technique. When some desire comes, consider it, then suddenly quit it. You feel a desire for sex, a desire for love, a desire for food, anything. You feel a desire. Consider it. When the sutra says consider it, it means don't think against or for. Just consider the desire, what it is. A sexual desire comes to the mind. You say this is bad. This is not consideration. You have been taught that this is bad. So you are not considering the desire. You are consulting the scriptures. You are consulting the past teachers. the rishis. You are not considering the desire itself. You are considering something else. And because of that something else, your conditioning, your bringing up, your education, your culture, civilization, your religion, you are considering many things, but not the desire. The simple desire has come. Don't bring in the mind, the past, the education, the conditioning. Don't bring in values. Just consider this desire, what it is. If your mind could be vast completely from all that has been given to the society to you, from all that your parents have given to you, education, culture, if your total mind can be vast out and a desire for sex arises, because the desire will arise, that desire is not given to you by your society. That desire is biologically built in. It is in you. For example, if a child is born and no language is taught, the child will not learn any language. He will remain without language. A language is a social phenomenon. It has to be taught. But when the moment comes, the child will feel sexual desire. That is not a social phenomenon. That is biologically built in. The desire will come at the right mature moment. The desire will come. It is not social. It is biological, deeper. It is built in yourselves. Because you have been born out of sex, your every cell of the body is a sexual cell. You consist of sexual cells. Unless your biology can be washed out completely, washed off, the desire will be there. It will come. It is already there. When a child is born, the desire is already there. Because the child is the byproduct of a sexual meeting. He comes through sex. His every cell is built by sexual cells. The desire is there, only a time is needed. So his body becomes mature to feel that desire, to emit that desire. The desire will be there. If you are not taught that sex is bad or good, if you are not taught that sex is hell or heaven, if you are not taught this way or that way, far or against, because both are teachings, the old traditions, old religions, Christianity particularly, the growing teaching against sex, the new cults of hippies and ippies and others, they have started the opposite movement. They say sex is good. Sex is ecstatic. Sex is the only real thing in the world. Both are teachings. Don't consider your desire according to some teaching. Just consider the desire in its purity as it is. A fact. Don't interpret it. Consideration here means not interpreting it. Just looking at the fact as it is. The desire is there. Look at it directly, immediately. Don't bring in your thoughts, ideas, because no thought is yours. And no idea is yours. Everything has been given to you. Every idea is a borrowed thing. No thought is original or can be original. Don't bring in thinking. Just look at the desire, what it is, as if you don't know anything about it. Face it, encounter it. That's what is meant by consider it. When some desire comes, consider it. Just look at the fact what it is. Unfortunately, it is one of the most difficult things. One of the most difficult things to do. Compared to this, reaching to the moon is not so difficult. Or reaching to the Everest peak is not so difficult. It is highly complicated. Reaching to the moon is highly complicated. Infinitely complicated, a very complex phenomena. But considered, compared to live with the fact of the inner mind, it is nothing. Because the mind is so subtly involved in everything you do, it is always there. Look at the word, if I say sex, the moment I say, you have decided for and against. The moment I say sex, you have interpreted. This is not good. This is bad. Or this is good. You have interpreted even the word. Many persons came to me when the book From Sex to Superconsciousness was published. They came and they said, please change the title. From Sex to Superconsciousness. The very word sex makes them disturbed. They have not read the book. And those who have already read the book, they also say that change the title. Why? The very word gives you a certain interpretation. Mind is so interpretative. If I say lemon juice, your saliva starts flowing. You have interpreted the word. In the word lemon juice, there is nothing like lemon. But your saliva starts flowing. If I wait for a few moments, you will become uneasy because you will have to swallow it. The mind has interpreted. It has come in. With words, you cannot remain aloof without interpreting them. So it will be very difficult when a desire arises to remain aloof, to remain just a dispassionate observer, calm and quick, looking at the fact, not interpreting it. I said, this man is a Mohammedan. The moment I said, this man is a Mohammedan, the Hindu has thought that that man is bad. If I say, this man is a Jew, the Christian has decided that this man is not good. The very word Jew, and in the Christian mind, comes the interpretation, the traditional, conventional idea flares up. This Jew is not to be considered. Now the interpretation is old and will have to be imposed on this Jew. Every Jew is a different Jew. Every Mohammedan is a different Mohammedan. Every Hindu is a different Hindu. This Hindu is a different, unique individual. You cannot interpret him because you know Hindus. You may have known all the Hindus and come to conclude that they are bad. Then to this Hindu is not your experience. This Hindu you are interpreting according to your past experience. Don't interpret. Interpretation is not consideration. Consideration means consider this fact, absolutely this fact. Remain with this fact. Rishis have said that sex is bad. It may have been bad for them. You don't know. You have the desire, fresh desire with you. Consider it. Look at it. Be attentive to it, then suddenly quit it. Two parts in this technique. First, remain with the fact, aware, attentive, what is happening. When you feel a sexual desire, what is happening in you? How you become feverish? How your body begins to tremble? How you feel a sudden madness creeping in? How you feel that as if you are possessed by something else. Feel it. Consider it. Don't take sides. Just move into this fact. The fact of sexual desire. Don't say it is bad. If you have said that, the consideration has stopped. You have closed the door. No, your face is not towards the desire. Your back is. You have moved away from it. You have missed a deep moment in which you could have gone down into your biological layer of being. You are clinging to the social layer which is the uppermost. Sex is deeper than your shastras because it is biological. If all the shastras can be destroyed, they can be destroyed. Many times they have been destroyed. Your interpretation will be lost, but the sex will remain. It is deeper. Don't bring superficial things in. Just consider the fact. And move within and feel what is happening to you. What happened to particular Rishi, to Muhammad or Mahavir is irrelevant. What is happening to you this very moment, this alive moment, what is happening to you? Consider it. Observe it. And then the second part, this is very beautiful. Shiva says, then suddenly quit it. Suddenly, remember. Don't say this is bad, so I'm going to leave. I'm not going to move with this idea, this desire. This is bad, this is sin, so I will stop it, I will suppress it. Then, there will happen a suppression, but not a meditative state of mind. And a suppression is really creating by our own hands a diseased being and mind within you. Suppression is pathological. You are disturbing the whole mechanism and suppressing energies which are going to burst any day. The energy is there. You have simply suppressed it. It has not moved out. It has not moved in. You have simply suppressed it. It has simply moved in sideways. It will wait and it will become perverted. And a perverted energy is the basic problem with man. All the psychological diseases are byproducts of perverted energies. Then it will take such shapes, such forms, which are not even imaginable. What type of forms it can take? And in those forms it will try again to be expressed. And when it is expressed in a perverted form, it leaves you in a very, very deep anguish, because there is no satisfaction in any perverted form. And you cannot remain perverted, you have to express it. Suppression is creation of perversion. This sutra is not concerned with suppression. This sutra is not saying control it. This sutra is not saying suppress it. The sutra says suddenly quit it. You will, what to do? The desire is there, you have considered. If you have considered it, it will not be difficult. The second part will be easy. If you have not considered, look at your minds. Your mind will be thinking this is good. If we can quit sexual desire suddenly, this is beautiful. We would like to do it. But your liking is not the question. Your liking may not be your liking, but just society. Your liking may not be your own consideration, but just tradition. First consider. Don't create any liking or disliking. Just consider. And then the second becomes easy, you can quit it. How to quit it? When you have considered a thing totally, it is very easy. It is as easy as dropping this paper from the hand. Quit it. What will happen? The desire is there. You have not suppressed it. It is moving out. It is coming up. It has stirred your whole being. Really, when you consider a desire without interpretation, your whole being will become a desire. When sex is there, and if you are not against it or for it, if you have no mind about it, just looking in the desire, your whole being will be involved in it. A single sex desire will become a flame. Your whole being will be concentrated in the flame. As if you have totally become sexual. It is not only at the sex center, it is spread all over the body. Your every fiber of body is trembling. The passion has become a flame. Now quit it. Don't fight with it. Simply say, I quit it. What will happen? The moment you can say simply, I quit it, a separation happens. Your body, your passionate body, your body filled with sex desire, and you become two. Suddenly, in a moment, two poles apart. The body vibrating with passion and sex, and the center silent, observing. No fight is there, just a separation. Remember this. In fight you are not separate. When you are fighting, you are one with it. When you have just quit it, you are separate. Now you can look at it as if someone else is there, not you. One of my friends was with me for many years. He was a constant chain smoker. And he tried and tried, as the smokers do, not to smoke. And one day suddenly in the morning he will decide, no, I'm not going to smoke. And by the evening he will be smoking again, and he will feel guilty, and he will repent. And then for a few days he will not gather courage again to decide not to smoke. Then he will forget what happened. One day again he will say, no, I'm not going to smoke. And I will just laugh, because this has happened so many times. Then he himself became fed up with the whole thing. This smoking and then deciding not to smoke, and this constant vicious circle. So he one day said, what to do? He asked me what to do. So I told him, don't be against smoking. That is the first thing to do. Smoke, be with it. So for 7 days, don't be against, do this thing. He said, what are you telling to me? I have been against it, then too I cannot leave it. And you are saying, don't be against it, then there is no possibility of leaving it. So I told him, you have tried with the inimical attitude and you have been a failure. Now try the other, the friendly attitude. Don't be against for 7 days. Immediately he said, then will I be able to leave it? So I told him, then again, you are still inimical towards it. Don't think about leaving at all. How one can think about leaving a friend? For 7 days, just forget, remain with it, cooperate with it, smoke as deeply as possible, as lovingly as possible. When you are smoking, just forget everything, become smoking. Be totally at ease with it, in deep communion with it. For 7 days, smoke as much as you like and forget about leaving. These 7 days became a consideration. He could look into the fact of his smoking. He was not against. So now he could face it. When you are against something or someone, you cannot face it. The very being against becomes a barrier. You cannot consider. How can you consider an enemy? You cannot look at it. You cannot look into his eyes. It is difficult to face. You can look deeply only in the eyes of one you love. You can penetrate deep. Otherwise, the eyes can never meet. So he looked into the fact deeply. For 7 days, he considered it. He was not against, so the energy was there. The mind was there, and it became a meditation. He had to cooperate with it. He had to become the smoking. After 7 days, he forgot to tell me. I was waiting, he will say, now the 7 days have ended. Now how I can leave it? He forgot completely about those 7 days. 3 weeks passed, and then I asked him, have you forgotten completely? He said, the experience has been so beautiful. I don't want to think anything else now. It is beautiful, and for the first time, I am not struggling with the fact. I am just seeing what is happening to me. Then I told him, whenever you feel the urge to smoke, simply quit it. He didn't ask me how to quit it simply. He had considered the whole thing. And the whole thing became such childish. And there was no struggle. So I said, when you feel again the urge to smoke, consider it, look at it, and leave it. Take the cigarette in your hand, stop for a moment, leave the cigarette, let it drop. And as the cigarette drops, let the urge also drop inside. He didn't ask me how to do it, because consideration makes you capable. You can do it. And if you cannot do it, remember, you have not considered the fact. You were against it all the time, thinking how to leave it. Then you will not be able to quit it. When suddenly the urge is there and you quit it, the whole energy takes a jump inwards. The technique is the same, only the dimensions differ. When some desire comes, consider it, then suddenly quit it. Third, roam about until exhausted, and then drop into the ground in this dropping behold. The same. The technique is the same. Roam about until exhausted. Just run in a circle. Jump, dance, and run again. Until exhausted. When you feel now, not a single step can be taken more. But you will have to understand. Your mind will say, no, you are completely exhausted. Don't pay any attention to the mind. Go on, running, dancing, jumping. Go on. Don't pay any attention. Mind will say, now you are exhausted, now you cannot go more. Continue. Until you feel, not think, until you feel the whole body is tired, a single step has become impossible. If I move, still I will fall down. When you feel that you are falling down now you cannot move, the body has become heavy and tired and completely exhausted, then dropping to the ground, in this dropping behold, then drop. Remember, be so exhausted that dropping happens itself. If you continue, you will drop. The verge point has come. You are just going to drop. Then the sutra says, drop, and dropping, in dropping, behold. So that is the central point in the technique. When you are dropping, behold, then what is meant? Don't drop just by the mind, one thing. Don't plan it. Don't try to sit. Don't try to lie down. Drop as a whole, as if the whole body is one and it has dropped. And you are not dropping it. Because if you are dropping, then you have two parts. You, who is dropping it, and the body which has been dropped. Then you are not whole. Then you are fragmentary, divided. Drop it as a whole. Drop yourself totally. And remember, drop. Don't arrange. Fall down. Dead. In this dropping, behold. And if you can drop in this way, you will feel for the first time your whole being, your wholeness. You will feel for the first time your center. Not divided, one, unitary. How it happens? Things. One, body has three layers of energy. one for day-to-day affairs, it is very easily exhausted. It is just for routine work. Second, for emergency affairs, a deeper layer. When you are in emergency, only then it is used. And third, the cosmic, which is infinite. The first can be easily exhausted. If I say to you, run, you will take 3 or 4 rounds and you will say, I'm feeling tired. Really, you are not feeling tired. The first layer is exhausted. In the morning, it will not be so easily exhausted. In the evening, it will be exhausted very easily because the whole day you have been using it. Now, it needs repair. So you will need a deep sleep. From the cosmic reservoir, it can get again energy enough to work. This is the first layer. If I say to you, run just now, you will say, I am feeling sleepy. I cannot run. And then someone comes and he says, your house is on fire. Suddenly the sleep has gone. There is no tiredness. You feel fresh. You start running. What has happened? So suddenly you were tired. The emergency has made you connected with the second layer of energy. You are fresh again. This is the second layer. In this technique, the second layer has to be exhausted. The first layer is exhausted very easily. Continue. You will feel tired, but continue. And within few moments, a new surge of energy will come. And you will feel again renewed. And there will be no tiredness. So many people come to me and they say, when we are in a meditation camp, it seems miraculous that this much we can do in the morning for 1 hour. Meditating actively, chaotically, going completely mad, and then in the afternoon and then in the night also, 3 times meditating chaotically. Many have said that we feel that this is impossible, we cannot continue, we will be dead tired, and the next day it will be impossible to move any limb of the body. But no one is tired. 3 sessions every day, doing such exertion, no one is tired. Why? Because you are in contact with the second layer of energy. But if you are doing it alone, go to a hill and do it alone, you will be tired. The first layer, when finished, you will feel, now I'm tired. But in a big group, 500 people doing meditation, you feel no one is tired, so I should continue a little more. And everyone is thinking the same, no one is tired, so I should continue a little more. If everyone is fresh in doing, why should I feel tired? That group feeling gives you impetus. And soon you reach the second layer. And the second layer is very big, emergency layer. When the emergency layer is also tired, finished, only then you are in contact with the cosmic, the source, the infinite. That's why much exertion is needed. So much that you feel, oh, it is going beyond me. The moment it is going beyond you, it is not going beyond you. It is just going beyond the first layer. And when the second layer is finished, when the first layer is finished, you will feel tired. When the second layer is finished, you will feel that if I do anything now, I will be dead. So many come to me and they say, whenever they reach deep in meditation, the moment comes when they become afraid and scared. And they say, no, we are afraid. it seems as if we are going to die. No, we cannot penetrate more. The fear grips as if I am going to die. Now I will not be able to come out of meditation. That is the right moment when you need courage. A small courage, and you will penetrate the third, deepest, infinite layer. This technique helps you very easily to fall into that cosmic ocean of energy, roam about until exhausted, and then dropping to the ground in this dropping behold. And when you drop to the ground totally, for the first time you will be whole, unitary one. There will be no fragments, no division. Mind with its divisions will disappear, and being undivided, indivisible, will appear for the first time.